WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk. Here on 95.9 WATD, coming to you from Broadcast House. And the rumors are true. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be here with you until 8 p.m. this evening. And we have a fantastic show lined up for you. I say that every week, and I don't know why, because I would not just want to provide you a radio program that's full of, ugh, you know what I'm saying? I want to give you some good content. And what I like to do, now I could have, you know, when the reins were handed over to me, by one Bob Hedlund, I could have done the same thing that Bob did. Bob would pick a topic, you know, whatever tickled his fancy at that moment, he would talk about it. And he was great when it came to talking about some of the legislative things that he was involved with, that he knew about, some of the people that he worked with. That was his thing. Me, I like to like turn this into Chronicle. And we do it, it's a local version of a magazine show where we have different folks who come in here. The first part of the radio program, sure, we speak with local legislators, and we are privileged to have some great legislators who are willing to come on in and chat about some of the things they're working on, what's going on up on the up on Beacon Hill. We call that the State House Report. Joining us, she's already here. She'll be joining us in just a few moments. So we have State Representative Joan Moschino is here.
Hi, everyone.
From the 3rd Plymouth District. A couple of things. I'll tease your palate a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about the legislative redistricting, the effects. It'll be brief. We won't get knee deep into it, but just get the elected officials' thought on it. Talk a little bit about the streaming bill that she has championed this session. Also talk a little bit about House Bill 4202. Last week she actually testified, and this is about seeking a waiver for non-fault overpayments of benefits. We're going to talk about that. And also, electric cars. Is enough being done to get you into one of these fantastic vehicles and help kind of save our environment here and move you away from fossil fuels? Old. We'll talk with her about that. And then Dave Wedge, best-selling author. My goodness, he has so many titles, but today he's joining us doing a little public relations for the city of Brockton, as he does for Mayor Bob Sullivan. And so we can talk a little bit about a celebration that they're having, an anniversary, special anniversary. Brockton is known as the City of Champions for a reason, because you have not only a fantastic football team, but also you've had two world championship boxers who have resided within the city, have called Brockton their home. This so happens to be the 70th, this coming Tuesday, tomorrow, is the 70th anniversary of a historic fight between Rocky Marciano and Joe Louis. Every time I hear Joe Louis's name, I think of that scene in Coming to America when they're in the barbershop. Goes, Joe Louis was 84 years old. You know, it's like that. But knowing that these two titans were in the ring fighting, and that there's going to be a little bit of a celebration about it, we're going to talk to Dave about that. Might even tease a couple of other things to see what Dave's at. But that's coming up at 6:40. Hour number two. We will speak with Chris Dempsey. He is a Democrat who is running for Massachusetts State Auditor. If you don't happen to know that the auditor, Suzanne Bump, is not seeking re-election next year. And so already a field is gathering. We're going to have our first chance to speak with Chris Dempsey and get to learn a little bit about him as he is out on the campaign trail. And then we close things out with Paul and or Bill Harris. I'm hoping that Paul and Bill will be here. They are with W Cornerstone Investment. And we're going to talk about a bunch of different things, preparing for the year-end tax proposal being put forth by the Biden administration. We're going to discuss a little bit about these inventory and labor shortages and what it's meaning for our wallets. And then also we'll talk a little bit about the curveball planning playbooks. We'll do that in just a moment. But right now, time for us to take a final check of what's happening out on the roadways. Be brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
Hey, Kevin Tosche. This time we're sponsored by UPSjobs.com. The Southbound Expressway is still slow. Mass Ave to Neponset gets heavy again after Granite Ave into the split. Expressway northbound, you'll see still seeing heavy delays. Quincy up to the gas tank. 93 southbound, the lower end. You're on the brakes. Canton to Route 24. Lower end of 93 southbound, seeing delays from Route 28 and Randolph to Route 24. 24 southbound, still heavy at the top merge in Randolph. 95 southbound, still extra volume down through Norwood, Coney Street, and Sharon. Route 3 southbound, you slow through Braintree down to before Route 18. The UPS Friday hiring event is back. Attend a virtual session on November 4th, 5th, or 6th. You can register at upsjobs.com/Brown Friday. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm David Cedrone in the WATD Traffic Center.
Well, looky there, grave digger. Taking a grave. Cave in. Ooh, Tori, the tree guy. Hope that tree doesn't fall in the wrong direction today. Sometimes I just like to sit on the hurricane barrier in New Bedford and watch the boats go out to sea. Fishermen, they're too easy. What's this? Oh, Brennan Smoke Shop. 10 locations across the South Shore and South Coast, one on the border of New Hampshire. Who's responsible for these? Where is he? Jeffrey, where are you? Let's see. Major supplier of lung cancer, heart disease, and emphysema, not to mention cardiopulmonary. Well, I'm sure in this day and age, a lot of people wish this guy was gone. Well, I think he's great. See you next Halloween, Jeffrey.
Brennan's Smoke Shop. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, quick out of the chute. So we are joined by our very first guest this evening. Again, the State House Report gives us an opportunity to speak with some of the great elected folks who work up in the Boston area, Beacon Hill, whether it's a state representative, whether it's a state senator, or one of the constitutional officers like auditor, or we used to have the governor come in, but we haven't talked to him since COVID broke out. So it is what it is, but we are privileged this week to be joined by, she serves the 3rd Plymouth District. I'm going to find a little bit how it's been tweaked as of late. Joan Moschino, Representative. Welcome back to the show.
Good evening, everybody. I hope you guys are all staying warm and dry. It's a little cold, rainy, windy out there tonight.
We are. Last time we had you here, you had a little bit of an ensemble with you.
Oh, the girls came with me.
The girls. we'll have to reunite before the end of the year.
Oh, we definitely have to do that. Yes, absolutely.
So let's start right off and talk a little bit about there are changes coming to the legislative map. How is this affecting you?
So, as everybody knows, we did the census. The census data finally came out, and the legislature took up to see what was going to change, and it's all the redistricting. There's only 160 state reps by law, so you look to see how many people you have, and then it's about geography and about math. It's about numbers. Honestly, it's a great refresh on who's in the district and how it's changing and, you know, opportunities for minority-majority districts to bring towns back together. So it's always a good time to have a fresh look. So 3rd Plymouth District is seeing a few changes. Mm. Overall, our population stayed pretty steady, although we did see some growth in a couple of our, say, Cohasset a little bit and Hingham. So we are reuniting Hingham. So I'll have all of the precincts in Hingham now, which will be good. I was missing precinct 2 before. Obviously, all of Hull, all of Cohasset. But the one thing was that... The third Scituate precinct in North Scituate, that little part of North Scituate, is going to revert back to Representative Kearney. So I know, I was so sad when they called to tell me. I was like, oh my God, I love Scituate. No. But, you know, I have to respect the fact that it's nice to be able to make the town whole again under one representative the same way we did for Hingham. But still, I was like, I hope I still get invited to stuff.
Do you expect to still hear from folks from that precinct, and even if they still have an issue? And what do you do as an elected official when someone's like, I need your assistance? You're like, oh yeah, well, they've kind of redrawn the maps now, so your representative is, or do you go, sure, I'll help you, but I'm also going to connect you with...
Right, that's what we do. So people call all the time. So maybe someone heard me on the radio and they reach out to my office. So we always try to help connect them to their state elected officials and make those introductions. But we are here to help, and we certainly support, and we would never just hand someone off. We'd always make sure that connection was made and that we were helping them. And if it was something like in Scituate where we had worked with the person closely, we'd finish it up. We would never just hand someone off. The other thing is that we actually have a really collaborative relationship on the South Shore among our legislative delegation. So, we work on things together all the time. I think Rep DeCoste was in talking about South Shore Votech.
Yep.
You know, he has my full support in their building project, and I'm happy to... It's just one example of the kinds of things that we do across boundaries and as a region, too. So it's all good. It's all good. But still, I love Scituate.
What's your favorite part about Scituate?
Well, I feel like North Scituate is just sort of the flip side to South Cohasset, right? It's all that harbor right there. So it's all the same issues of resilience and seawalls and
keeping the Coast Guard.
Yeah, keeping the Coast Guard. It's all the climate change stuff. It's all the economic development, right? Because that's not just an individual isolated town thing. That's across borders. So it was the ferry and the commuter rail and all of the transportation stuff. So Scituate can count on me to still hang in there for them every step of the way.
Excellent. A particular piece of legislation that selfishly I'm watching, because I'm somebody who has worked in PEG access for 20 years, and it's shown how local cable has shown how important it was during a very tough time, tough stretch during the pandemic over, 18, 19 months. You refiled a streaming bill.
Yes.
And that's where there will be a nominal fee to some of the streaming platforms. Where does that stand right now?
So it's actually in the Joint Committee on Advanced IT, Internet and Cybersecurity, and there's a hearing on Wednesday. Ooh. I know, so you have an opportunity to register if you want to give testimony or send in written testimony in support of it. Everybody can watch the hearings themselves. All you have to do is go to malegislature.gov, and what comes up is all the hearing schedules right there on the website. You can just scroll through it on the calendar, and it's all live streamed, so you just click the live link. And it should also give you instructions on how to submit testimony. And if it doesn't, just give our office a ring, 617-722-2320, or Joan Mosquito at malegislature.gov, and we'll help you do it. But yeah, it's going to have a hearing, and it's really a pretty basic bill. House 130, I think it is. And what you do, what it does is the same way we assess a nominal fee to our cable providers to support public access and to support our local programming, now we're going to update to include all forms of technology, including the streaming services. It's that basic, and it's all for good cause. All of your local programming, which was so important to us during storms, during the pandemic, trusted sources of news, information, and government.
And what people don't understand is that, you know, the licensing agreements that a lot of these PEG access centers has is with, you know, the titans, such as the Comcast and the Verizons.
Right.
But yet, when people are cutting the cord, not realizing that you're affecting it by your... You're affecting those stations because they get capital funding through those licensing agreements, public rights agreements. And so what happens, we're seeing, as people are cutting the cord, and as you're seeing a dip in subscribers, because that's where the money, the revenue comes from, that's, so this will help kind of supplant or kind of backfill what was being lost.
Right. It's really meant to support those PEG channels, those, all of that public access. And, you know, honestly... We should want to do this, right? This is all of our local things. This is, you know, Hull and Peter Seitz, man on the street, you know, at events. This is how you watch your selectmen's meetings and your school committee meetings. It's also a lot of the cultural pieces, too. A lot of the programming that gets done there, a lot of educational stuff. And so it's, you know, it's hugely important, and it's nominal. It's nominal. And this time we're doing it really easy. We're just saying 5% goes into a fund that's dedicated for this purpose. A little bit of it goes to the state to administer. A little bit of it comes to the town, and a little bit of it goes to the PEG Access Channel. So everybody gets something. And the whole point is really to make sure that there's, you know, trustworthy sources of information and robust programming happening at the local level. It's all good.
Yeah, and there's, and if you don't know, I mean, there are many, many access centers here on the South Shore. Marshfield TV does a great job. PAC TV does a phenomenal job.
Harbor Media.
Harbor Media. Norwell.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Hull does great. Oh, my gosh, it's tremendous. So we actually have excellent broadband, or excuse me, local media down here. And there's money in the ARPA funds right now, the bill that just came out of the House.
For infrastructure.
For infrastructure. Yep. And it's looking at broadband. It's hugely important.
Fantastic. It's a great update so far. And again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with the State Representative Joan Mosquito, representing you in the 3rd Plymouth District. But as her and her colleagues like to do, they all work together for the greater good of the South Shore. I want to move to a particular bill that you actually had. You were part of a hearing last week.
Yes.
And that's House number 4202, and this is in regards to seeking a waiver in regards to non-fault overpayments of benefits. And I think I was reading one of your Twitter posts, and you were saying you received a lot of feedback from your constituents in regards to this particular bill, and some folks who actually fell victim to this.
Oh my gosh, yes. So what happened was, as we closed the economy for the pandemic, for COVID, and people got laid off, and we stood up a couple of different programs around unemployment to really stabilize workers and their families, and also, you know, to make sure that, you know, that money was in, you know, going to things like housing, basic needs, right? Food, you know, all of the things that you spend just to get through the week. And it worked great. People got in. We really helped a lot of people with it. Now what's happening is, as they should, they're going back and they're reevaluating all their claims. And what they're finding is that there were errors that were made. Legitimate errors. Sometimes it was, you know, just they were trying to get people on so fast, the volume was so huge. And now they're going back and they're just doing the audit as we would expect them to do. The problem is that when they find people who have received an overpayment through no fault of their own, they're clawing that money back. And it's, sometimes it's like $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $15,000. I've seen $20,000. And the problem is that people actually needed that money. They were applying for it. They spent it on basic needs. And now the state's trying to claw that back. And they don't have it, right? Because regular people, workers, you know, they go through their own savings first. They use all their resources. And they only file when they absolutely have to. Right. And now it's creating a hardship. So there is a waiver process. The problem is that it wasn't very, it's not a very robust process, and it's on short time frames. So all we're doing is we filed a legislation that basically gives more guidance to DUA on how to handle these things. And really it all boils down to some specifics, but equity and good conscience. And so just to reiterate, though, if it's not, has nothing to do with fraud, right? That's a whole nother kettle of fish. This is exclusively for people who filed in good faith, where there was no fault, and they can't repay that money. So, yeah.
Has there been any kind of a number assigned to these clerical errors that were, you know, that they're expecting that to claw back?
Not yet. We did ask for that information. This was a late file bill. It did get a hearing last week. And we have asked to see what the scope of the problem is. But just to be clear, this is money that was already paid out. So it's not going to cost anyone a penny more. It's about whether or not it gets paid back. And if people are listening and you've had this happen to you, call your state representative, because we can help you make sure that you file the waiver, that that you can try to make the case to keep that money if it's a hardship for you. So I would just encourage people to reach out. And the chair of Labor and Workforce Development is our very own Josh Cutler.
The Josh Cutler.
And he did actually put out a post on Twitter asking for people to give back, to talk about what some of their experiences are. And they've been pretty aggressive through DUA, through the administration. I mean, people are even getting notices that they're going to, you know, take it out of, you know, any tax checks that they have coming back to them, or off the top from, you know, future unemployment they might file for. So it's pretty aggressive.
And this was strictly unemployment benefits that they were overcompensated at.
Yep,
before.
That's it. And it's only during the pandemic of 2020 and 2021. So it's we've got our hands around what the problem is. And again, you have to file for it. So if you have any questions, just reach out to, you know, DUA, or reach out to your state representative or your senator. And we're happy to help you and provide what information we can.
What does that say to you as an elected official? Knowing that there's, again, we don't have a round number just yet, but knowing that there's tens of thousands of dollars that were erroneously paid out, and, you know, again, what happened over the past 18, 19 months, nobody could foresee, but yet you would think that in good faith, people would be doing their jobs and be making sure, okay, I want to watch where the decimal point goes, or, you know, how I'm paying this individual out.
Well, it was more about eligibility and less about and timing. So once they were standing up the program, all the eligibility guidance was coming out in drips and drabs from the federal government. So DUA was doing the best they could. So we really shouldn't be casting aspersions on the agency.
Okay.
They were trying to fulfill the spirit of that law to get money into the hands of people, to stabilize those families, those workers. And quite frankly, we spend locally, so it also goes into our economy. About 72-73% of that money is federal dollars. And so it was federal money. And it all happened so fast that, like, for example, I might have gotten an overpayment because you should have sent me a notice 3 months ago that I wasn't supposed to get those last 3 months of a check, right? So it had as much to do with process as it had to do with eligibility. But the spirit of the law was to really try to stabilize families and their workers and families, and we did that. But now I don't think it comports with the true spirit to claw that back. Especially when not everybody is back to work. You know, people are back to work for less than they were making in the past. And there's still a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of housing and food insecurity. There's still a lot of, you know, think about our hospitality right? Think about our hospitality industry. A lot of those people aren't back to work. So there's still a lot of insecurity around, and that's really why we did it. But you have, it's not automatic. You have to file for it. You have to make the case. We're just enhancing what some of the criteria are. We're making sure that everybody, it's in plain language, right? Just plain English, making sure that, you know, technology is not a barrier, expanding some of the time frames. Some people didn't even realize they had a right to a waiver. So it's all about notice and due process and enhancing it to make sure that people have a meaningful opportunity to really say, you know, against equity and good conscience, please don't take that money back. And that's really what it does.
So when will we hear a report about the hearing that was held last week? Could this be a couple of months?
It could be. We're going to file an amendment on the ARPA bill. Even though it's not a spending bill, it does sort of comport with some of the investments and the supports we're making in the unemployment trust fund for small business, for business of all size. So it seems to fit that way, but it'll be an ongoing conversation.
Okay. Just have a couple of minutes left here, but I want to make sure that we squeeze in. I was, again, perusing for different things to talk with, and I want to kudos to Jordy, who I worked with, your aide, who was great.
She's awesome.
getting things together. And one of the things that caught me was something that were a couple. There were a couple of posts in regards to alternative transportation methods and why is it Massachusetts? What can be done to have folks be able to purchase electric cars? Are there enough incentives for folks who want to shift from fossil fuels to alternative modes of transportation? And you made a couple of good points about that. What are you hearing these days as somebody who's a champion of our environment and, you know, rising seas, all those different things that you care about and that you fight on behalf of?
So, you must have seen the Commonwealth Magazine article
that I wrote with
the state director at Ceres. And what we're really saying is that now that the 2050 roadmap is in place and our net zero goals and our interim targets are there, now we have to do the work of it.
Yeah.
And transportation is the biggest sector. So 43%, that's where Massachusetts really needs to focus. So what we did was we filed a bill that would just create some investments in infrastructure. So like charging stations, you know, along the Mass Pike. So
not
you
enough.
Can have some consumer confidence, yep. Right? You need to know you can get from point A to point B, but also making it more accessible for everyday people to buy an electric vehicle. And so, you know, point of sale rebates, you know, trainings for the people selling cars, right? So the dealers, all these kinds of things to make it people have more confidence and to really start transitioning people over to drive an electric vehicle. It's the 43% of our emissions right now. And quite frankly, there's a huge public health benefit that comes along with it. So I had filed some things around zero emission vehicles. There's also a bill that I'm co-sponsoring with Rep. Christine Barber out of Somerville for electric fleets, like electric buses, school buses, things like that. And then one of my colleagues, Steve Owens, has a bill around electrifying the T. And then Natalie Blay has a bill around e-bikes and things like that. So it's a multifaceted plan, and it's my piece around it is really the zero emission vehicle. So it's really exciting to jump to the work of it and see if we can't start to really get people excited and buying ZEVs.
Well, next time you're here, I would love an update as to where the bill stands or as to where the push, how it's going.
Pending in a committee right now, but the speaker has been talking a lot about his wind bill. And so we're excited, we're optimistic that the investments in the wind sector are going to drive a lot of investments in infrastructure around, say, grid modernization and electrification. I mean, those are the three pieces that we kind of have to do next. So
just a little bundling maybe there?
Well,
alternative energy
try.
Bundling? Okay.
I'm working it.
Okay. If folks want to, you know, reach out to you about anything we've talked about, or maybe they got their own issue that they're dealing with, how can they reach out to you and Jordy?
So constituent services, number one priority in my office. Please call us, 617-722-2320. Jordy will answer or get right back to you. And my email is the best, joan.moschino@mahouse.gov. Please, if you think there's something we can help you with, reach out anytime.
Representative, as always, there's usually not enough time in the show to be able to have you come on and talk about all the great things that you're doing, and a lot of the representatives and senators who come in. So again, your visit is always appreciated, and we look forward to the next time already when you're going to be back in.
Oh, and this time we'll have to come in with my posse.
Absolutely. And if you want to add to your posse, feel free.
We will.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back in a couple of moments, Dave Wedge joins the fray. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggins makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close. Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggins Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginsPub.com.
Do you believe in love at first sight? I do. I call it curb appeal. Unlike when you meet a person, a buyer often judges a book by its cover when they first see your home. We'll tell you how to get buyers off the curb and into your home. Join me, Sharon McNamara, the broker owner of Boston Connect Real Estate, along with my team and other Boston Connect Real Estate experts at our Talk Real Estate Roundtable to discuss this top tip and many others. Tomorrow night, after the news at 6, here on 95.9 WATD.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
So we are back. And joining us is none other than Mr. Dave Wedge, best-selling author. They say he has so many different hats that he wears. But he's also here, a little bit of a PR mission. Talk about a great event that's coming up tomorrow night. It's going to be held at the West Middle School, the auditorium, 271 West Street in Brockton, 6 p.m. when the doors will open. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Sir, how are you? It's wonderful to be back.
I have to tell you, just as a little bit of a sidebar, I didn't realize that you can roller skate so well.
You know, that video, I may have to post that somewhere else. It was just in a story, so it's kind of disappearing today, but my wife put it up, and I've gotten so many comments on that. But yeah, I played hockey my whole life, and I grew up roller skating around Brockton. My dad was actually a roller skating figure champion when he was a young man.
Get out of here.
So, yeah, when he was like 12, 13, he was like a state and regional champion. He went to the Nationals. He was something, and so, you know, we just always went as little kids, so I always learned how to roller skate. And I always, you know, I like to dance. I always danced as a, you know, growing up and stuff, so.
Yeah, see, I tried dancing.
I can move, Kevin, a little bit.
Can you? I can't.
A little bit.
It's ugly. You would think that, you know, that I would probably have a little bit more rhythm, but I don't. You know, working for a radio station, you would think a guy like me would, you know, be able to move, but I can't. But that's not why we have you here. We actually have you. But I wanted to comment. I definitely enjoyed the video, and I thank the missus for posting it and sharing it. I thought it was fantastic. You can move, definitely. I could see the skater. You look like more of a defenseman than a forward, though.
Yeah, no, Jessica's great. So we have a lot of fun together. And you know, we're actually in Whitman at the Carousel and family birthday on Sunday, and that's a great place if you haven't been. I highly recommend you take your kids or go there with your friends. It's fun.
So let's talk a little bit about this this epic fight, the 70th anniversary between, you know, the Brockton Blockbuster and the Brown Bomber. You know, two champions, one a champion at the time, one a former champion, going at it.
Yeah, no. So, you know, as you know, I Brockton native, grew up there, and the mayor, Bob Sullivan, was a high school and a college classmate of mine at Boston College. And ever since he's been in office, I've been doing a little bit of consulting work with the city, helping, you know, kind of promote things going on in the city and, you know, trying to really get the word out about all these great things going on in Brockton so that, you know, people just don't see the negative stuff in the news. And this is one of them. This is great. You know, it's, tomorrow is the 70th anniversary of the fight between Rocky Marciano and Joe Louis. And actually, Rocky was not yet the champion in that fight. He was he was just coming up, and Joe Louis was returning from an early retirement. He was 37 years old. Rocky was, I think, 27. So Rocky was like the, you know, the up and coming heavyweight. Everyone was like, this guy's the next great one. And Joe Louis was, you know, 37 and trying to make a comeback, and Rocky ended that pretty quick. You know, it has a, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but, you know, it wasn't Joe Louis's greatest fight, to say the least. And, you know, it became a punchline in the, you know, Coming to America movie where they say, you know, Joe Louis was 137 years old when he fought Rocky. But he wasn't 137, but he was 37. But today, that's not that old for a fighter. But back then, it was, you know, might as well have been 50, you know. So, great fight, but the news here is that you know, the mayor, in an effort to kind of continue to promote the City of Champions and you know, teach the history to you know, the people of the city and beyond, we're doing a special showing of the fight in its entirety at West Middle School at 6 o'clock. It's free and open to the public. There'll be some special guests there from the Marciano family who will be speaking afterwards and answer some questions if people have questions about Rocky or the fight itself. So yeah, it's going to be a great night. I'm super excited. I'll be there. The mayor will be there, and there'll be lots of folks there.
Talk to me, Dave, about the importance of preserving the city's legacy, knowing that it's known as the City of Champions, and because of these two champions, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who we celebrated his life this summer, and then celebrating this historic fight. How important is it?
Well, it's huge. You know, Brockton's not only known for its boxing; it's known for a lot of things. You know, it's a shoe capital of the world. It was Thomas Edison had his first office there. The first electric streetlights were in Brockton. Home of the South Shore Bar Pie, of course. You know, we agree that Cod is the launching pad of that. I think, and you know, but boxing is a huge part of the city's beginnings and the city's reputation nationally. Rocky Marciano certainly created that image. You know, being a scrappy kid that grew up in Brockton and fought his way out and became, you know, the undefeated heavyweight champion, 49-0. And then Marvin, of course, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, middleweight, about 30 years later after Rocky moved to Brockton from Newark, New Jersey, came to Brockton for a better life, and certainly he found it when he met the Petronelli brothers, and they trained him into, in my opinion, if not the greatest, one of the top three greatest middleweights of all time. And, you know, so that history, I think it's important for the kids in Brockton to learn. Like, these guys grew up, you know, Rocky grew up on Dover, was it Dover? I think Dover Street.
Yeah, Dover Street, you're right, yep.
Yep, and you know, Marvin fought right on School Street, which is now Petronelli Way downtown. That was his gym, and you know, these guys were a huge part of why Brockton has that fighting spirit reputation, and I think it's important to continue to spread that message to make everyone feel proud of the city that they live in.
And again, if you're just tuning in, we got Dave Wedge joining us as he's sharing details about this great event that's taking place tomorrow night. So showing the match between just before he became champion, Rocky Marciano,
yeah,
taking on the you know, the former champion who came out of retirement, looking to make a little bit of a comeback as these two clash in the ring, and you have a chance to see this fight from 1951. My goodness, I can't believe it was so long ago, but you will be able to meet with some of the members of the Marciano family. I'm sure that they'll be there. I'm sure that Peter Sr. Will be there. I'm sure Steve will be there. You'll have some of the members of the Marcianos, the Columbos, will be there as representation.
Yeah. So actually, Peter won't be able to make it tomorrow night, but Rocky and Rocky, who's not Rocky Jr., it's actually Rocky the Fighter's nephew, yep. Rocky, who was a Brockton High grad football player, great guy, great friend of mine, and his brother Steven, who was another great football player at Brockton High and went on to play at Boston College. So they will both be there, and I'm not sure if other members of the family will be, but it's a historic fight, and everybody knows the legend of Joe Louis, and that was not his night, and it was Rocky's night. It was really the beginning of Rocky's real meteoric rise to stardom. He just dismantles Joe Louis in pretty spectacular fashion, and a lot of people, you'll see when you watch the fight, but a lot of people have talked about Rocky's legend, and they said that it broke his heart to win that fight. As much of a champion as Rocky was, he had so much respect for his competition and his elders and his mentors, and that's kind of another piece of the Brockton history and the Brockton spirit, is that we respect competition, we respect those who are the best at their craft, and you always want to win, but you want to win respectfully, and I think that's a big message out of this fight.
This past Saturday, WATD broadcast the Brockton High School football game versus New Bedford, and during that time, McQuinn Kelly, the announcer, was actually made mention of the fact that this could possibly be the last year for Peter Colombo. Peter Colombo was son of Armand Colombo, the field name after that coach, Rocky Marciano Stadium. Let's not forget, I think, Pete Filey, press box. I think there's even the track is named for a running coach. Give me your thoughts on being a Brockton guy, Brockton High School. Another historical thing that where Peter might be retiring at the end of the year.
Yeah, Peter's not as old as Armand was, and Armand coached into his 80s, late 70s anyway. Yep. I think, it's the high school football game is not what it once was. It's a very different landscape when it comes to competition. And Brockton was, the greatest dynasty in Massachusetts high school history for decades, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and into the 2000s. But now it's become this sort of almost like the hockey where these kids are, team jumping, and, all the kids jump over to Everett, or they jump over to Xavarian or BC High, or CM now is a real juggernaut, St. John's Prep. And it's hard for us, as big as Brockton is and as many great athletes has come through there, they do lose a lot of kids these days to other programs. They lose kids just that, can't cut it to stay on the team for whatever reason. So, Peter Colombo's got his hands full with keeping the program at the level of excellence that everyone expects.
Yep.
So that's the tremendous pressure, and I don't blame him one bit for whatever decision he ends up making. I think he's done a wonderful job. He's won a couple of Super Bowls. He's won several Big Three titles, obviously. And, I think he's another great member of that athletic family that's been so important to Brockton's history. So I wish him well in whatever decision he makes.
Again, we're speaking with Dave Wedge, best-selling author. Dave, this is a moment for you. Probably one of the most recognizable Brocktonians. With Casey Sherman in a few weeks ago. And he brought us up to speed as to some of the things he's working on. I know he's your partner. You guys have written a couple of best-selling books together. What do you got in the works right now that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, sure. Well, we have our podcast, first and foremost, which is called Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers. And that's available on all podcast networks. We're in season two. It's true crime storytelling. We tell stories about all these different, cases that we've covered throughout our careers as journalists and as authors, from Whitey Bulger to the Boston Marathon to you know, murder cases that you perhaps have never heard of to Deflategate, you know, and it's a lot of fun. We're having a good time with that. And it's on the Mudhouse Media Network, which is run by a good Quincy guy, Chris Meyer, who I think you know, Kevin.
I do.
Chris is great. He's a producer for the Farrelly Brothers for many, many years, produced Fever Pitch and Something About Mary and Kingpin and all those great Farrelly Brothers comedies. So it's great to work with those guys. And then on the writing front, Casey and I are about to get started on our next book, which is going to be a military book about an attack on a military base in Kabul in 2011, that killed 9 U.S. Air Force members. It was the deadliest day of for the U.S. Air Force in the Middle East until this most recent situation. So that's, and the story is really about the hunt for justice for the families and to, you know, unravel the mystery of what happened. So that one we're getting going on. And my next book, I did a book with a guy named Ken Croak, who was a ATF agent based in Boston. And he went undercover for 2 years and infiltrated the Pagans, the motorcycle gang, which are the Hells rivals. And, you know, he had a wife and 3 kids at home that he really didn't see much for 2 years while he embarked on this incredible, dark and dangerous journey. So that book is called Riding with Evil, and that comes out in March of 22, and I'm super, super excited about that. And, you know, in addition to that, we're just trying to develop other, you know, other materials that we've worked on, you know, different books are in different stages of development for movies and TV and things like that. So, you know, me and Casey, we're always working hard and trying to tell great stories however we can.
Is it true that there's going to be a little bit of a tour for the Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers podcast? Are you guys doing a little bit of a public showing?
Yeah, so we're going to do a stage show. We're getting going on that soon. Our first, I think we have a couple coming up before, but we have a show on April 22nd at the Wilbur Theater in Boston.
Nice.
And tickets are available now at the Wilbur website. And, you know, it's going to be a night of true crime storytelling. It's going to be very immersive and interactive. We'll tell first person's, you know, stories about covering these cases, what it's like to go behind the curtain of these investigations. And it'll be very interactive. There'll be a lot of, you know, there'll be a multimedia component to it with, you know, crime scene photos and audio recordings and some actors. So it's going to be pretty cool. You know, the true crime space is very popular right now, and people like this type of storytelling, and you know, it's kind of good for Casey and I because it's what we've always done. So we're excited about it.
Well, definitely congratulations to you and Casey for all the success that you're seeing. It's not without a lot of hard work and a lot going on between between the two of you. You both are, it's, you know, it's a great pairing that you both found each other and have been able to turn out some fantastic books. And are now, you know, you got a production company that's in the works, and you're doing podcasts. So I continue to watch the success, and one day I'm sure you'll move to somewhere in West Hollywood in California, and we'll be doing phone conversations from there.
I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to move to California. I'm too old. I'm happy right here. I'm in Milton these days, and I'm very happy in the South Shore area, and you know, I love being in Brockton for these type of events tomorrow night, and I my family's here, and I love it here. So, but I will be traveling out there many, you know, plenty, I'm sure, in New York as well. So as we do, you know, we go out to LA a couple times a year as it is, but you know, before COVID, we'll be getting back to that, I'm sure, soon.
Well, Dave, thank you for sharing a little bit of your time, and not only talking about the upcoming event tomorrow night at the West Middle School. Again, it's the Brockton celebrates the 70th anniversary of the historic Rocky Marciano Joe Louis fight. Again, that's a 6 p.m. start for that at the West Middle School, 271 West Street, and also giving us an update on the great things that you and Casey are working on.
Yeah, definitely, and thanks for the time, and you know, I hope people come out tomorrow night. It'll be super fun. Thanks, Kevin.
You got it. There he is, Dave Wedge, our guest. We are going to step aside. I can't believe it. That concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Fear not, though. We got a great hour number two on tap. You're tuned in to 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than two or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Glass. As a kid, on Halloween, I always wanted to go as the Shadow.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
That laugh, plus the power to cloud men's minds. But you can't go out as a Shadow. As a Shadow, they can't see you at night. So instead, I decided to do something even scarier. I dressed in a three-piece suit, polka dot bow tie, black Oxford, snap brim hat, and a name tag over my breast pocket. Hello, I'm Peter Brown. I'm from Riskapolitan. Life insurance. Trick or treat.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back. Hour number two. Later this hour, we will have Paul and Bill Harris from WH Cornerstone Investment. They'll be here, and we'll talk about investing and what to do with this last quarter and many other things as well. And joining us in just a second is a gentleman who I'm privileged that Christine James actually gave me a little book. She had Mr. Chris Dempsey, who is Democrat for Massachusetts State Auditor. She did an interview. She goes, "This guy's fantastic. You should have him on your show. Here's the information." And I'm like, "Okay, awesome." And this is my second conversation with Chris. And I've said to him a couple times, he's got fantastic pipes. He's got the really bassy voice. But he's going to be joining us in just a second. I just want a quick tease here regarding a show. We have True Repertory Theater on here from time to time when they get upcoming shows. We weren't able to get them in tonight because we had a star-studded lineup. And we just didn't have time, but they got a show that's going to be this weekend called Reckless. It's a comedy by Craig Lucas, and they got shows the 29th, 30th, and 31st. And if you want to find out more about this particular performance, and they do a great job when it comes to performances, check them out, True Repertory Theater, and don't forget, theater is re.com. Mr. Dempsey. Welcome to my radio program, Monday Night Talk. For those who don't know who you are, because I know you've been out there campaigning, but there may be a few folks who don't know who you are. You are hoping to campaign to be the next Massachusetts State Auditor. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Kevin, it's great to be on with you. And I know this is a special day on the South Shore because it's Jim Cantwell's birthday today.
Really?
Former state rep and current state director for Senator Markey. That's the big news, and we're wishing him a happy birthday, and I'm sure all your listeners feel the same way about Jim.
Jim, I tell you, Jim was always a staple as a state rep, and serving Senator Markey, he's still an item. Fantastic. I'd sing happy birthday, but My voice is a little raspy today, per se. But happy birthday, Jim. Hope you're enjoying it. Hopefully he's tuned in and hearing us providing some well wishes to him.
I'm sure he's got friends and family members that are listening right now, and his phone is probably ringing off the hook.
Excellent.
But it's great to be on with you tonight. And I am Chris Dempsey. I'm running for Massachusetts State Auditor. The incumbent is Auditor Suzanne Bump. She is not running for re-election. So this is an open seat in the 2022 cycle, and I'm running in the Democratic primary. And the state auditor's office is not one that every voter feels like impacts their daily life. It's, for a lot of people, kind of an obscure office. But it's a really important one within state government. It's all about making state government more transparent, more accountable, more efficient, and more fair. And it does that by taking a team of about 200 auditors and analysts and sending them into every corner of the executive branch of state government to figure out what's working, what's not working, and how things need to change. And I'm going to bring my experience working within the executive branch of state government, my experience in the business sector and the private sector, as well as my experience outside of state government, standing up for the public interest, into this role and help make state government work better for taxpayers and for residents.
If you will share with folks your role, I believe that you were appointed by Governor Deval Patrick to serve within his administration. What did you do for him?
I did. So I was Assistant Secretary of Transportation for Governor Patrick in the first term of his administration. And I rolled up my sleeves in state government and tried to make things work better, and can point to some places where we succeeded. In particular, I co-founded the MassDOT program that created all of the smartphone applications that tell you when your bus or your train is going to arrive. Now, we did not fix the more fundamental problem of those trains and buses being late. And I get the frustration with the Greenbush line and and the Middleborough line and all of the frustration, of course, with traffic on Route 3 and 3A. But we did at least provide that information to transit riders, and it's really empowered people to plan their day better. You no longer have to be waiting for the bus on the street corner or on the train platform with no idea about where that service is. You now have that information in the palm of your hand. I'm sure that your listeners will agree that the MBTA is not known as a place for innovation, not exactly seen as a cutting-edge organization. It was when I was there and when I was leading that program. We made the MBTA the very first transit agency on the entire East Coast to make those applications available to riders of the public transit system. So I'm really proud of delivering better results for people within state government and saving taxpayers money versus some more costly alternatives at the same time.
And you also, again, at, you know, to help the taxpayer, were also an opponent to the Olympics coming here when it was under consideration for 2024, correct?
That's right. And people may remember this debate that we had in 2014 and especially in 2015.
I do.
You know, look, the Olympics on its face can be a really exciting proposition. I'm a sports fan. I was hoping we were going to host the World Series this year. That didn't work out. But I like a big sporting event. I like crowds. And I like the idea of showing off our wonderful Commonwealth to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We've got a lot to brag about and to be proud about. But when you start looking at the history of prior Olympic host cities, you see places like Montreal that took 20 years to pay off the debt from their Olympics. You see places like Athens, Greece that had empty venues that are still sitting there decaying and deteriorating. And I think we've got a really bright future in Massachusetts. I did not want to see that future put at risk where we would spend $15 billion on a three-week sporting event when we have so many other important needs. When you read that fine print of the International Olympic Committee contract, you realize that the IOC, which awards the Olympics, is really taking all of the benefits and all of the upsides, and they're giving the taxpayer all of the risk and all of the costs. They require that host city leaders, the mayor and the governor, sign a contract that says that taxpayers cover 100% of the cost overruns. And that didn't sit well with me. And so we co-founded No Boston Olympics in a living room in Boston. We got outspent by the proponents of the Olympics, 1,500 to one. They spent $15 million to sell to the public that that was a good idea. We spent less than $10,000 on our side, but we were able to succeed because we had the facts on our side and we built a grassroots effort, and we can talk more about this. My takeaway from that is that when Massachusetts residents are given a good set of information, and when we have good data, that Massachusetts voters and residents are a pretty savvy bunch of savvy group of people, and we can get to the right decisions. And that's what the state auditor does, is it digs into the executive branch, it figures out what's working, what's not working, it puts that information back into the public realm, and then we get to build a stronger state government together through that process.
So what is so appealing to you in regards to running for this particular office? Because you could choose running for state representative, state senator, you could run for governor.
Well, for me, this is a really good fit for my background and for my interests. I really enjoy rolling up my sleeves, digging into the details of state government. You know, state government does so much in people's lives. It runs and regulates our transportation system. It provides the Mass Health Program, which covers almost 50% of all children in Massachusetts fall under the Mass Health Program and get their basic health benefits through that program. It runs the Unemployment Assistance Program. It runs hospitals, it runs schools, it runs the university system. These are institutions that make dramatic differences in people's lives. And we all pay a lot of taxes to make that happen. We all have a lot of pride in our state. We need to make sure that those institutions are running as well as they possibly can. If you're a child in under the care of the Department of Children and Families, which is the foster care system, and that program is not running well, it's the only thing that matters in your life. It doesn't matter if your school system is working well. It doesn't matter if your healthcare system is working well. If you are not being protected by that service, it's the only thing that matters. And we need more advocates within state government for programs like that, those core social safety net programs that the state needs to deliver on. I want to be that kind of advocate within state government.
Talk to me about the current auditor right now, Suzanne Bump. Yep. Some of the things that you've followed or that you've researched in regards to her time in office, reports that her office has generated on certain government agencies. Is there anything that has stuck out? Anything that you like on? That was a great report. Yep. I liked how that was put together.
Well, and your listeners may know that Auditor Bump has some strong Plymouth County ties and South Shore ties. She was a state representative from Braintree for many years, and she lives in Easton and has been in this neck of the woods off and on for many decades now, and a great advocate for the South Shore. I've known her since 2006 when we worked together on the Deval Patrick and Tim Murray campaign to get those two men elected. And I find her to be a really exemplary public servant and someone who is in it for the right reasons. And I applaud her for her career. She has focused on some of those basic social safety net programs that I mentioned. She's been the champion of something called the Backpack Bill, which would allow a student who is in foster care, who is changing schools, to have their school records travel with them. So that if they enter a new school system, there's good information about what they were learning in the prior school system and that they can be kept up to speed and not have to restart if it's an area of study that they've already learned or followed. I think issues like that are really important. She's been focused on issues like law enforcement and how do we think about smart police reform. I think she and I are both supporters of law enforcement and people that are on our front lines and serving and protecting us. But I think many people also agree that there's a need to make sure that we're testing that system and that it's responsive to people's needs and the needs of communities, that we are not placing too many burdens on our police officers and law enforcement officers that makes their job almost impossible to do because we're asking them to do too much. And she's actually won some national attention for that work even before the death of George Floyd, when that conversation was under even more scrutiny and attention. She was involved in that before that. And I give her credit for understanding that that was an important issue and having a sense that it was something that the auditor could help with.
Knowing that this is basically virtually an open seat, knowing that this is going to be a crowded field, what do you feel is going to set you apart from other candidates?
Yeah. I think I will be the only candidate in this race who has both executive branch experience, having worked in the guts of state government, which is really the focus of the auditor's job. I'll also be the only candidate that has significant private sector and business experience. And I don't think that the private sector has every answer for how to fix things within government, but I think it's a useful and a helpful perspective to have. I've worked, for example, at a software technology startup here in Massachusetts that's helped to grow jobs and grow the economy by bringing together really smart people and selling a product that was purchased by companies and government agencies around the entire country and around the world. Those kinds of innovative companies are what make Massachusetts really special and really unique. It's kind of our natural resource is the talent of our people. And we need to make sure that we are bringing the best and brightest ideas from the private sector into the public sector as appropriate, to make sure that we can get better services for people and deliver better. Again, it's not that the private sector always has the right answer, but it's worth asking questions about whether there's new ways to think about some of these longstanding problems within government.
And you're out in meeting folks and making them aware of your campaign.
Yep.
Those who understand what the particular office is, what seems to be some of the questions that they're asking you, or what are some of their concerns that they're sharing with you as a candidate?
Yeah, we get questions all over the place. And we were really fortunate earlier this month to do what we called the Plymouth County Tour. And we came down to Brockton and Middleborough and Plymouth and then up to Pembroke all in one day. And Right. We met grassroots Democratic organizers and activists and just regular citizens who wanted to learn more about our campaign and got to hear directly from them with some of their issues. So we do hear about police reform and law enforcement and the issues that have been taking place at the state police. That's something that we've heard about. We hear a lot about the unemployment assistance program. People may know that at the height of the pandemic, that program was unable to make the basic payments to people that deserved their unemployment assistance payments because the state was unable to prevent the fraud and abuse that was happening in the system. And so they essentially shut it down entirely. So in people's worst moments, when they had just been laid off from their job, they're in the height of the pandemic, they were not able to have access to those resources that they deserved. So we hear a lot about that. That needs to be fixed. And again, that only gets fixed when you have people in government that are willing to roll up their sleeves and focus on the details. It doesn't get fixed by standing on a soapbox and talking about broad platitudes. You have to have comfort with the details and actually fixing things. Another area that we hear a lot about, Kevin, is climate and the environment. And I'm honored to be following in this conversation tonight Rep. Joan Moschino from Hull and Hingham and Scituate and Cohasset, who has been a leader on climate and the environment. Yep. And I think people know that she really led on the most recent climate bill that passed in the legislature that is a national leader in terms of climate legislation. And I'm honored to have her support in this race. For coastal communities like the ones that she represents, climate change is very real, and it's a very real threat to the livelihoods and the lives and homes and businesses of those communities. I'm really excited about what we can do in the auditor's office to address climate. And here's one example. We will make the state auditor's office in Massachusetts the first in the country to incorporate carbon accounting into our audits of relevant state agencies. And that will allow us to track the impacts, pro and con, of various state programs in terms of their carbon emissions and hold those agencies accountable for the laws that are now on the books, thanks to great state reps like Rep. Moschino. So that's a way that people can think differently about what the auditor's office can do. And I'll tell you, Kevin, that we will be the first state auditor's office in the country to do that. We will not be the last, because once we started here in Massachusetts, other state auditors around the country will look at it and say, that's a pretty good idea. We're going to start doing it too. And we can make Massachusetts a leader on climate through that process.
Will it be a lot of work to be able to, will it be a lot of work on behalf of your staff and your office to be able to do that? And what systems are you going to have to put in place to be able to keep track of that?
So we're going to focus on the big buckets here, right? So the auditor's office audits every part of the executive branch. I was reading a recent audit about the Old Colony YMCA and some youth programs that get funded through state government for like summer camps and after school programs. You know, those don't have a very big climate impact. So we're not going to do a carbon audit of those programs. This is more for the big chunks of emissions, transportation, which we know is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, the energy production sector and the utility sector, our natural gas and home heating, some of the large state facilities like the university system or the healthcare system or even the public corrections system, all of those have large emissions profiles, and we can look at those. In some cases, that data is already available. It's just that we're not bringing it together in a way that people can really understand and grab onto.
Right.
And we're not holding the agencies accountable to those numbers. And that's where the state auditor comes in, is synthesizing that data, making it more accessible to people, and then saying to those agencies, and sometimes pounding our fist on the table, that they are not getting the job done and we're going to hold them to account until they fix it.
So I'll ask you this. And again, I don't want you to tip your hand, because it's still early on.
Yep.
In this race, and I'm sure things will start heating up towards the end of this year, early next year, candidates announcing their intention to run for office, whatever the particular office is. But what do you feel are going to be a couple of the key issues in this race that are going to gravitate to voters, and that you might have a distinct advantage?
Yeah. Well, I think people are going to look at this position as one where they want someone who is qualified for the role, and who has had a set of experiences in their life and in their career that prepare them for this pretty unique job. Again, not a job that most voters are thinking about on a daily basis, but they know they want to send someone to Beacon Hill who's going to watch out for them, watch out for their tax dollars, watch out for their families, watch out for their communities. And when I look at my experiences in my career in the public sector, my career in the private sector, and in the grassroots level with groups like No Boston Olympics, I don't think there will be another candidate in this race that will have that diversity of experiences. And I think all of them provide value. If I only had one of those, then I don't know that I'd be running for this office, because I don't know that I'd feel prepared. But because I've been fortunate to have those different perspectives through my career, I think it does prepare me for this role. And there will not be another candidate with that breadth, with that ability to say, I've seen that problem before, and I've worked to actually fix it. Standing up for taxpayers against a steamroller of an Olympic bid, where some of the most powerful people in Massachusetts were pushing that bid. Working within state government to say, hey, we've got this challenge here where people are waiting for buses and waiting for trains, and they're frustrated, and they don't have the information. We know that the information exists. How do we get it to people? And it was the creation of those apps, by putting that information in the cloud, that really made that happen. It was thinking about a long-standing problem and coming up with a new way to look at it and finding a cost-effective solution. I've demonstrated I can do that. I'll be the only candidate in this race that has done that. And I think that's the skill set and experience that people want in this office.
Has it been a challenge to campaign at the tail end of a pandemic?
It is. And it's interesting because it changes on almost a daily basis.
Right.
And, you know, we see the numbers thankfully coming down more recently, but early on in this campaign, the numbers were rising.
Yeah.
And we want to be very respectful and thoughtful. People want a state auditor who is cautious and who is driven by the data and driven by science. And so what that says to me is that when I'm in a room with a bunch of people, I'm going to be wearing a mask, because that is cautious leadership, and it's fact-based leadership to do that. I got to tell you, it's no fun to be a candidate for office trying to meet people for the first time and wearing a mask, and they can't see my facial expressions. It's much harder to establish a connection with people. But if that's the price that I pay as a candidate, to know that I'm keeping them safer, I'm keeping myself safe, and hopefully setting a good example for all of us that this is the right thing to do, as frustrating as it is, it's something that I'm proud to do. And I think that voters will respect that and respond to that at the end of the day.
And it's worth noting, again, as I teased at the top of the hour, was that this is my second interview with Chris. And we actually, because of where the cable studio is located, it's housed in a school. And the protocol is that you have to wear a mask because we are housed in school. And that's you got to follow those rules. And we conducted an interview with masks, and I thought it went fantastic. I think this one's going just as well. Anything we haven't touched upon during the past 20 minutes, but
yeah,
you want to make sure you touch upon it before we say goodbye.
Yeah, Kevin, thanks for asking that. I mean, I think I've talked a lot about my background and my vision for the office. I want to talk about a little bit more about who I am as a person, because I think that's important for people to hear too. So I'm the son of public school teachers. They met while teaching in the Boston public school system in 1970. My mom and dad were actually placed in adjoining classrooms at the Martin Luther King School in Boston. And it was love at first sight. That's my dad's version of the story. At least my mom is not so convinced that it was love at first sight. I think it took her a little bit longer to warm up to him. And I've seen photos of how my dad dressed in 1970. So I can understand why she might have had her reservations.
Tough years.
But eventually I was the result of that happy marriage, along with my little sister, Allison, who is a public school teacher herself. And she is married to a woman in New York City who's also a public school teacher. We're celebrating in my family this week because they just shared last weekend that they are expecting their first child, which is the first grandchild in the family.
Amazing.
So my parents are excited and my fiance and I are excited. But I grew up in a middle-class family of teachers, and my parents were the kinds of teachers, like many, who dug into their own pockets to pay for school supplies for their students or for extracurricular activities for their students. And growing up with parents like that, it makes you wonder about public policy and what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. And it's that kind of experience when, for example, I heard about a $15 billion bid for a three-week Olympics that I said, I'm not sure that should be our priority. When we need to be funding public schools, we need to be funding public health, we need to be funding the environment, some of these more basic programs that benefit everybody. That's who I am as a person. It's why I'm inspired to run for this office. And I hope that people can know that about me and that will be part of their consideration as I think about voting for this in September of 2022.
Well, I would imagine also that a $15 billion bill for a central artery project was also something that might have resonated with you. So you're going, oh no, not again, not for 3 weeks. Something that's going to take, you know, 10, 15 years to do.
That's right.
So I definitely can...
And you can imagine the folks in Western Massachusetts who feel that they paid for all of that, yep, and they don't benefit from it at all, yep, in the way that maybe at least some South Shore commuters do. So that's what I say to folks in Berkshire County. If you liked the big dig, you would have loved the Boston 2024 Olympics.
Fantastic. Well, if folks want to get involved with your campaign, whatever it is, whether it's donating, whether it's getting involved and helping with the campaign, or maybe they just want to find out more about you as a prospective voter, how can they do that?
Best way to do that is to visit our website, which is dempseyforauditor.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/dempseyforauditor. And if they go there, they can learn more about me, they can learn more about the office. They can follow us on social media. They can make a contribution, which we're always very grateful for. That's the best way to engage, and we hope to have as many people go there as possible and let us know who they are.
I have to say, and you and I, when we had talked a couple of weeks ago, and I had mentioned the fact that your last name, right, that of, I think, of Jack Dempsey, mm-hmm, knowing that there was a boxer as an auditor in DiNucci.
Yep.
And then having a conversation about, Rocky Marciano and Joe Louis, which is kind of interesting that, like, there's a boxing thing that's happening. Not to drag you into that, but hey, you know what? Chris Dempsey fighting for you, you know?
That's right. I like it. And I was just actually listening to a podcast last night about Marvelous Marvin Hagler from Brockton, of course.
Sure.
And his amazing fight against Tommy Hearns, which was known as one of the fights of the century. And we were all sorry to lose him, I know, at the beginning of the pandemic.
Sure.
But a wonderful South Shore Plymouth County guy who really made us all proud.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us here. And hopefully we can have you back in maybe the beginning of the year, yep, as things really start to heat up and we can find out how progress is treating you in regards to getting the word out about your campaign.
That'd be great, Kevin. Always happy to be on with you, and thanks for the opportunity.
He is Chris Dempsey. He is looking for your vote to come, well, next year, the primaries. But keep his name somewhere close as he's running for Massachusetts State Auditor come 2022. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggins makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close. Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
I'm CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Dealing with car repairs can feel like a lose-lose situation. You lose your money and your time. And if you don't have the right coverage, just one repair could bleed you dry. If you call CarShield, you won't be worried about expensive repairs anymore. CarShield administrators handle the paperwork and expensive payments, so you don't have to. It's a win-win. Seriously, CarShield could save you thousands. You get to pick your favorite mechanic to do the work, and CarShield administrators take care of the rest. It's like they're your own personal team of auto repair problem solvers. Plans from CarShield even provide roadside assistance, rental coverage, and trip reimbursement, all at no additional charge. Whether your car has 5,000 miles or 150,000 miles, CarShield has monthly coverage options to fit your budget. Get coverage today and see why CarShield cars go farther. Visit carshield.com/Jill to save 10%. That's carshield.com/Jill. A deductible may apply.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And welcome back to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Again, just want to throw a quick plug out. If you're looking for something fantastic to do this weekend, if you're somebody who loves theater, great performance being put together by True Repertory Theater. They're usually on this program on a regular basis. We had a full plate this evening, so we didn't have any room for anybody. But the name of the show is called Reckless, the wackiest thing that ever happened on Christmas Eve. And these performances, of course, are going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you want to find out more in regards to this performance, go to their website, True, T-R-U-E, Rep, R-E-P, Theater, theatre.com. Their performances are going to be taking place at the Beale House in Kingston. Joining us, wait, I think the group who's in front of me right now are from Kingston. Am I wrong here?
The office is in Kingston, absolutely.
Okay. That voice, of course, is none other than Paula Harris.
Hello, Kevin.
And I was teasing Bill, her husband, who is here. I was giving my condolences because I know he is a true Boston sports fan.
This is true.
And he suffered a loss last week with the Red Sox, and so I gave him my condolences.
Thank you.
It was a community loss, though, Kevin. It wasn't just a personal loss.
I'm going to be honest with you, Paula. I wasn't expecting them to get past the Yankees or Tampa Bay.
Well, that's what Bill said. Actually, it was a win. They got past the Yankees.
Kevin, I'm feeling pretty good. We got the Yankees, and then we beat the Jets 2-0 against the Jets this year. It's been a good year.
But the problem is your three wins are against meh teams.
Oh, well, I know. But
a win's a win.
Okay. So I have regular conversations with Paula and Bill, both of them owners of WH Cornerstone Investment, and they have been kind enough to come on a regular basis to help you, to help me when it comes to certain things. We've even talked about their books. Actually, we're going to be talking about Paula's book as far as the Widow's Journal, which was recently published. We'll talk a little bit about that. We talk about Bill's book, but Bill didn't bring it.
We can still
talk about it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. They can't see if it's here or not.
That is true. that is true. But I thought we could, when I had reached out to you, knowing that we're cruising through the fourth quarter of the year, I wanted to get an opportunity to talk to some financial people about, here I am, I don't know how well I did this year, but if I want at least get started off on the right foot for 2022. Well, I don't want to wait until December 30th to do that. I want to maybe plan ahead. So I thought it was good to at least have the two of you in together.
Yeah.
To talk a little bit about how things are going and how to plan ahead for my my finances moving forward.
Kevin, you said it perfectly, because now's the best time to be looking out into next year. A lot of shows are going to talk about year-end tax planning and everything else, but really, let's start looking to the new year. Now's the time to plan for next year.
What are you hearing from folks who are, you know, who are looking at their finances right now and they're looking ahead?
So I would say there's a little uncertainty what's going to happen with the Biden tax plan. So there's some people who are a little nervous about that. But I think you have to come back to thinking about what is it that you can control. You can control your cash flow, what's coming in and what's going out. So only each individual who's personally responsible for their own financial cash flow, what can you focus on? So do you need to trim here? Do you need to trim there? Can you save more? So, I mean, we're big fans. You can never save enough. That's a big deal. And I think we've talked about it before, but automating savings is the best thing that you can do. Pay yourself first. Have it come off the top. Have it put into a separate account so that you're not seeing it out of your working capital account. So if you haven't set that up, that's a great thing to do right now.
No, I will admit that I actually have an IRA. It's a Vanguard IRA, and I honestly don't look at it.
Yep.
But automatically, every 2 weeks, an amount of money comes onto my paycheck. Never see it.
Perfect.
And it goes in.
Perfect. And I'm saying you're
making the job easy for us. Yeah. It is perfect. Vanguard's a great company, great place for it to go.
But here's the thing. I'm kind of a little bit older. I'm on the other side of 50. No secrets here. But I can't invest like I would have if I was in my 20s or my 30s. Is that correct?
Actually, you have the advantage of being over 50 is you get a catch-up contribution for your IRA. So you get to put an extra $1,000 away. So I think what you're maybe talking about is the aspect of compounding, of the time of compounding. So someone who starts younger has a greater chance of that snowball of money to build up, but they don't get that catch-up contribution like you get or like we get.
Just want to pry a little into the way you phrase that. Are you worried about taking on too much risk? Is that the way, why you're asking that?
No, because I'm not doing it. The problem with again, where I'm so busy.
Yep.
One thing is I'm so busy, and the other thing is I'm careful. The people that the circle of people that I trust, it's a small circle, and they've earned my trust. So it's hard to decide who do I want to bring in that's going to help me with this, because sometimes when you're talking about finances, you talk about money. Sometimes the people you trust aren't necessarily the people that you want to trust when it comes to money. Maybe they can be trustworthy with, you know, a secret, or guess what I got grandma for Christmas? Yeah. But don't tell her. You know, you can trust them with that. But someone who, you know, who wants to take advice from, you know, Joe at the water cooler, and should I trust that? No.
That's a good point. I think, Bill, you talk often about how you knew the dot-com bubble was coming, because when you're driving up and down Route 95.
I remember one time seeing truck drivers fighting about over the inverted yield curve, and I said, oh, this is getting near the end. But so, yeah, Joe at the water cooler can be dangerous. You know what, Kevin, you're touching on a lot of great points. Really, when you go to an advisor, it's almost like a marriage. That's the biggest thing. You got to be able to trust that person, and you got to trust what they say, and you really do have to be careful to the person next to you sitting at the desk saying, oh, I bought Bitcoin yesterday and it's tripled and quadrupled. And so you want to get someone you trust, and then you'll know over time if they're giving you
your advisor's got to trust you too, because this is a part, like Bill said, it's like a marriage, it's a partnership. So you've got to hold up your end of the bargain just as the advisor needs to hold up their end of the bargain. So, you know, you commit to doing something, you got to follow through just as the advisor does for a really successful relationship.
But is it worthwhile to have money taken out, put into an IRA, and ultimately do nothing with it, and having, you know, it might the dividend it might yield might be like $3 annually?
Well, I don't know what you're putting it into, so that's a part of the issue. Like, I'm okay with setting it and leaving it alone, but you should be making sure it's going into the right place. It's going to help you get to where you want to go.
So I think we talk a lot about, when you're unsure, a target date fund can be great. So you pick a the year you're going to retire, and you find the target date fund that's as close to that, and then it will be professionally managed. It will have a glide path as it gets closer to retirement, and that way, you know, it's invested, it's growing. I mean, it will follow what the market's doing, but, you know, the market ebbs and flows. That's probably a simple piece of advice for the average investor, so you don't get caught up in thinking about too much a target date fund.
Ken, if you're tuning in, we are speaking with Bill and Paula Harris, who are with, or actually own, WH Cornerstone Investment. We're talking a little bit about investing. What can you tell the listeners in regards to your understanding of the Biden tax proposal and how it may have an effect, whether it's this year or next year?
How much time do we have?
Yeah, you got about 20 minutes.
Yeah, so I always listen, there's a lot of talk in the financial media, and I know you're in the media, but I think the financial media likes to scare people. And until that law passes, we don't know what's going to be in there. So we have to wait till it's completely passed. There's a lot of proposals that are out there, but really, it right now, the fight in Congress is, you know, being decided on what's going to be in there. But I will tell you, we're at a historical low for taxes right now. I would be anticipating you're going to see some tax increases. And, you know, where they hit, we're just going to have to wait and see. I would caution people to start making crazy year-end moves based on what may be passed, and I would wait until we know about that. Now, there's some situations where that might not necessarily be good advice. For example, if you were someone who was going to be giving away a lot of your estate anyways towards the end of the year and gifting might go away, well, maybe you want to accelerate that. But for the most people, I'd wait until the law passes. But we can touch on some of the highlights of it.
Yeah, capital gains is one of the big issues. You want to talk about that?
So capital gains is going to go up to probably one of the biggest increases we've seen in a while, proposed. It's going to go up to 25%. And they made it retroactive back to, I think it was September 13th. So if you thought you were going to like, oh, let's sell before the end of the year, you're not going to do it. So that's a big one. A lot of people have been able to do what are called Roth conversions. They're trying to take that away.
The backdoor
Roth, you might hear that term a lot. What that means is someone who's not able to contribute to a Roth, they can put money into a regular IRA and then convert it right away.
Well, and typically someone who's not able to is they earn too much money.
Right. And they're talking about taking that away as well. So again, it seems like there's a lot of IRA and Roth IRAs in the crosshairs of Congress right now, but we're just going to have to wait and see where they settle it.
And in a case folks don't know, and I never want to assume that anything we're talking about, everybody understands soup to nuts. Yep. But what's the difference between a regular IRA and a Roth?
That's a great question. Yeah. So an IRA is a retirement tool. And you make a deal with the government to say, I'm not going to pay taxes today on this money. I'm going to put it away tax deferred. It's going to grow tax free, but then I'm going to have to pay taxes when I take it out when I hit retirement. A Roth IRA is, I am going to pay the taxes today. It's going to grow tax free. It's going to come out tax free. So, you know, what it's all about is really, you're making a decision on taxes today. So the chances are, taxes are probably at a historical low, as Bill said. Taxes will be higher in the future. So a lot of people like the idea of having tax-free income in retirement. And one point we hear every once in a while from people, they don't realize that their IRA is going to be taxable. And it is. So people don't necessarily, it comes as a surprise for some people. And that shouldn't be, but we have to all focus on it once in a while.
And just to break that down a little further, too, to get down to the real nuts and bolts of it, I've heard people say, well, what's the Roth IRA earning? You know, like it's a special investment. It's just the way it's taxed. That's all that Roth means. It's not a typical investment. You can invest in anything you want, but it's how that account will be taxed.
Is the tax percentage lower, or is it the tax, whatever the going rate is at that particular time?
So it's going to be the going rate at that particular time on a regular IRA. Correct?
On what your tax bracket is, too.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, if we earn different amount of money, we might be at the 22% and might be at the 24%, that type of thing.
So let's say I got the traditional, I just get the regular IRA. Depending on what my income is, what would the tax rate be at the end? Could it be 22%, 24%, whatever it is at that particular time?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
And people don't realize that, though.
A lot of people don't. So what's one of the great things about a Roth IRA is when you get to take that income out, you're not going to pay taxes on it. So it doesn't affect, you know, you're not taking out more income that's going to add to your tax base.
I always call the Roth probably the best deal in the tax code. So there's not too many things that come out tax-free in our tax rules.
Is there a possibility that down the road that the government might want to eliminate the Roth, or do they see that as an alternative to Social Security?
So they keep adding different Roth. Just a few years ago, there wasn't a Roth 401k. Now there is. So they keep adding Roth in a favorable way.
Right.
But there's provisions in this new tax code now where they, you know, for wealthier people, they want to, I think, take away that Roth option. So we'll have to wait and see.
But I think you always say, Bill, is Congress is made up of people like you and me, for the most part. And they put money in Roths as well. So the chances are they won't want to do something that's going to hurt themselves as well. That's not necessarily a fail-safe statement, but you know, you have to hope that they're going to look out for their pocketbooks as well.
Now, do you have clientele who see the Roth as like any money that they're putting away in an IRA or a Roth, that it's money that they can borrow from? Can you borrow from an IRA or a Roth? And what's the dangers in that?
So you can't really borrow from it. There is a provision where you can take money out and get it back in there within 60 days.
Okay.
We always caution people against doing that because if you miss it, you can cause some problems. So, but it's not, you're not borrowing it. It's literally you're taking money out, you get 60 days to get it back in. So we've seen in crazy real estate times where people are like, oh, I'm going to sell my house. I'll take it out of my IRA. And then when I sell the house, I'll put the money back in. The house doesn't sell. And then they get hit with a huge tax bill. So,
But on the Roth, you can take out your original principal.
Yeah, on the Roth, you can, again, because you're putting in with after-tax dollars, you can pull out what you put in, and there's no tax consequences on that.
But the consequences, you're robbing your future. Mm. So if you saved, you know, $100,000 or, you know, $1 million for your future, and you take out $100,000, that's no longer growing in the markets.
Right.
You potentially have spent it. Yeah. And that's going to be detrimental to the future. This is the biggest problem I think we have in our society is delayed gratification. I want it all now.
Oh, yeah.
And, retirement is going to be expensive for a lot of people. It's going to be a long period of time. And you don't want to rely on state assistance for the rest of your life.
No.
You want to make sure you have enough money to take care of yourself.
I was going to say, we've been at this business for a long time, early 90s, we set this up, and I've yet to see someone come into my office and say, oh my God, I saved too much money. It has never happened.
Right.
And in fact, it's usually the opposite. Like, wow, this is going to be tough. Like, so, the United States is interesting. You're kind of left on your own to plan for your own retirement. There's a lot of sacrifice that goes into that.
Right, and there's like a lot of unseen things. What's interesting is we're living longer.
Yeah.
At least that's what they're saying.
Yep.
Which means that you have to plan to have that much more money if you want to, if the quality of life in your the twilight of your life is going to be better than just living off of whatever you're given from Social Security.
Right.
Yep.
And, it can get scary. I mean, we had someone come in recently. Her Social Security payment was the same amount as her rent payment.
Oh, that's the other thing, yeah.
So, and the cost of housing up here is really expensive. You know, we often, if we talk to someone who's really on that razor-thin margins, consider moving to some other part of the country
where
it's a lot less expensive.
I had a client come in and talk to us. They moved to another part of the country, and they said, my pension wasn't what it used to be because of inflation. So these are real issues that people are faced with. So, again, you can't save enough. And so we will, people who are younger the more you can save when you're early, the better off you're going to be in the long run. And again, that Roth IRA, would you rather have $100,000 that's tax-free or $100,000 that Uncle Sam owns a third of? I mean, it's an easy equation.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can I build on, Bill, you talked about the Roth being the best deal on the tax code. You want to talk about the second best deal?
Well, the Roth is the second best deal.
Oh.
The number one
best deal in the tax code is what's called health savings accounts. And what that is if you have a high deductible health insurance plan, you can put, it's the only thing I know of that has a triple tax benefit. It means you can put it in, get a tax deduction, it grows tax deferred, and then when you go to pull it out, it comes out tax free, assuming you're using it for medical expenses. So every year, Fidelity comes out with a study that talks about what people will pay on their long-term care out-of-pocket expenses throughout retirement. I think last year it was like $280,000. So, like, you need another pool of money that you're building up to help save. And these numbers sound astronomical. But, and, again, with some planning and some sacrifice, they're doable.
So my next, and this is a segue here.
Okay.
Because I want to kind of get to one of our next topics. You were talking about money, talking about our wallets. Because of the pandemic, life has gotten crazy. We're seeing inventory shortages, seeing favorite restaurants not being able to open the hours that they usually do because the short-staffed folks aren't necessarily returning to the where they were working. They're seeking other careers. What does this mean for us moving forward?
Well, it's interesting, Bill. I think you'll be good at addressing this. Bill writes a column for the Old Colony Memorial, and on Labor Day, that's what your column focused on.
I don't remember what I wrote back on Labor Day. Come on. So I'll you know, Kevin, put it in simple terms. Let's just hope this is transitory. We don't. No one has a crystal ball. We really don't know. But if we just go back a little ways, and you're a lumber mill, and you're forced to close down for 3 months, and you're not producing anything, and then we come out of this, and everyone needs lumber, well, yeah, prices are going to rise through the roof, and there's not going to be enough supply. Yep. And so if you're out in the port of Los Angeles, and you can't get workers, and the ships are just sitting there for days on end, it just compounds. So I believe this to be transitory, but I don't know that. And I think the powers that be, and I mean that in the government and everything else, in the Fed and everyone else, they're looking at this as transitory as well. There's obviously some voices out there that don't agree it's transitory, but we won't know until the long haul.
It's definitely very interesting. And it's interesting that you mention about ships being off the coast. When me and my missus went on a cruise a couple of weeks ago. To the Mexican Riviera.
Nice. It wasn't a Disney cruise?
No.
Oh.
No, we haven't done one of those yet.
Okay, well.
We've been to Disney. Many, many times. No, we haven't gone on a boat with a bunch of characters, no. Well, actually, we have, but they weren't Disney.
They weren't dressed.
They weren't Disney characters. But there were a lot of ships that we saw, container ships, that just sitting there, anchored, nowhere to go.
Wow.
You know, going out of Long Beach, it's like, wow, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think I might have the numbers off a little, but, you know, it takes 14 days to go from China to L.A., and then it's taken 20 ships are sitting there for 21, 22, 25 days before they get unloaded. So yeah, that's a problem. But, again, hopefully this gets worked out. And, Kevin, I do think there's a lot of inventory in people's houses. I know a lot of people are stockpiling toilet paper and everything else. So, like, some of these inventory supply things can be I'm being serious. We have what's called just-in-time inventory in the United States, and I sat on a conference call this week, a webinar, whatever you want to call it, and it was the former Federal Reserve, and he was talking about that just-in-time inventory is tricky. And so now we don't, you know, because everyone produces at the last minute, and now it throws shockwaves through the system. So I think there's just a lot of adjustment going on.
We're just living in crazy times.
Yeah.
We really are. From, you know, computer chip shortages for vehicles to, you know, there's certain things that won't be available for the holidays if you're going to go shopping for that special loved one. It's just regular everyday products.
Well, actually, tying this back to money a little bit, I heard something this morning, which was they are really saying we're going to have shortages for Christmas. So people are buying now, but a lot of the people that are buying now are buying on credit. So they have to be very careful. So they're missing on the sales that will be coming next month.
Yep.
And they, you know, if you are doing that, you want to make sure you're using the credit card that has your lowest interest rate. So you really try to pinch your pennies where you can.
Yeah, not the one that's loan sharking you.
No.
29%.
No.
What's up with that?
Yeah, you want to avoid those cards as much as possible.
Hey, that's good for people like me who go shopping on Christmas Eve. So let them get it all done.
Let's take a moment to give you each an opportunity to give to discuss your books. Bill with Inheriting My Spouse's IRA. And, of course, the book that you're involved with, A Rise Up, A Widow's Journal. How is Widow's Journal doing?
Sure. So, as we may have talked about in the past, we have a specialty in working with widows. So I saw this need of how do you deal with your emotions during this really difficult time in life. And so I designed a journal with 10 chapters. It starts with 5 writing prompts, and then there has 20 quotes in each chapter to get you to think about something that you're going through. And so the first chapter starts off suddenly single, because you don't know what hit you. You've got to figure this all out on your own, and you got to figure out how you do it. And then it moves into sort of fact that grief has no time frame. I mean, and people have to get over, they can't compare my loss to your loss because we may deal with it in totally different ways.
Sure.
Then there's, obstacles. Obstacles become much bigger when you're widowed. And then we talk, journal about wisdom, love, faith, money, and then it gets to the point where you're moving forward and you can see the future and how you're able to live again on your own. Because ultimately, every widow is entitled to a full, rich life. It's going to be different than the one she had, but it still can be a full, rich life. And so this journal is 235 pages. Some people have told me it's too beautiful. They can't write in it, but it's meant to be written in, and it's available on Amazon or through our website. You can learn more about it, too.
And I would say that it's probably very therapeutic as well, right?
Yes. Journaling can be very therapeutic.
Which meant to do.
And the nice part about this is it's not blank pages, which that's what freezes a lot of people. There's the prompts there, so you don't have to feel like, oh, my gosh, one more thing I have to figure out.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's getting great feedback.
When did you come up with the idea?
I came up with it actually sitting at a Jack Canfield conference a few years ago. I saw the power of that, writing down your goals, writing down your feelings, working through emotions, and that's when I came up with the idea.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Bill, how is inheriting my spouse's IRA
how
doing?
How can I go on after that? That was too good. But
big shoes to fill.
So just real quick, building off the widow theme, I mean, people don't realize, what do we have, 70 million plus baby boomers. The average age of widowhood is 59. Yep. So unfortunately, we're just seeing this time and time again. I'm one of those nerds that actually looks at tax court cases all the time. And the number of times I can see a widow who inherited her spouse's IRA and did something incorrectly, and they go to tax court because a lot of times people's retirement is a big number and they make a mistake and it's irrevocable. So it's some of the things you can do as a widow, only a widow is allowed to do, and no other beneficiaries can. And so this book kind of walks you through the different choices and options and make sure that you do things properly. So
folks want to get a copy of this and kind of follow along with how they can kind of inherited and not make those mistakes?
Yeah, so again, it's on Amazon. So just Google that title on Amazon, put my name in, whatever, and there it is. And it's the Kindle version, I think, is like $3. It's not expensive. And again, it's literally a mission. We just don't want people. And the book is written to be read in an hour. It's for advisors and for the layperson to read, like, just make sure you get this transaction correct.
Did you do the audio version, the audiobook version yet?
I didn't do an audio version.
Come on,
with his Boston accent, wouldn't that be great?
That would be fantastic. At least you'd say Worcester, right?
I've done some
audiobooks where that, like, the local dialect, and like they can't say Worcester right.
It's okay. Sometimes I get mail that says Duxbury, D-U-C-K-S.
Bill, Paula, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
And I want to thank you for tuning in. I promise next week another great show. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.